And Celebrate Recovery, we have 25 lessons. We have 12 steps. And so through the course of the year, we go through the 12 steps with 25 lessons. And the last lesson that is taught in Celebrate Recovery in the course of a year is a lesson entitled Reasons We Get Stuck. And that's to folks who are working the 12 steps. You get to the last step and you say, now, if you're not where you ought to be, if you're not where the program says that you ought to be, here are some reasons you might have got stuck in a ditch along the way. And it's a great sort of catch-all lesson. Now, I'm not going to borrow that lesson, but I'm going to borrow that title this morning, because I want to talk to you about some reasons why we get stuck in life, in prolonged seasons of unhappiness, of discontentment, prolonged seasons where we may be believers, we understand the gospel, we understand the scriptures, but as we look at the scriptures, as we look at the gospel, what we see in our own lives really does not measure to what the Bible says we ought to be seeing. We're stuck. We're in Blahville, so to speak. I remember growing up and my mother would look at me as a teenager and she would say, I know you're unhappy. If I could do anything for you, I would. I just don't know what to do for you. And there are those seasons. And so I want to talk to you about reasons we get stuck in life. And you may be there. I'm speaking to you from personal experience this morning. Everything I'm going to say, I've experienced to some degree or another. I've been in those places where you simply have periods that last longer than they should, where the peace that passes understanding and the contentment and the sense of purpose and the feelings like you're doing or something or accomplishing something in life disappear. There are seasons of discontent. They come into our lives, again, oftentimes as believers, oftentimes as followers of Jesus Christ, but they do come into our life and they come with certain reasons. And I want to give you a few as time allows. Again, I've experienced this. First reason, sometimes believers experience periods of great discontentment in life is because we start comparing our lives to other people. We're believers, we trust Jesus, but our eyes really start to wander around and we look at what's happening in the lives of other people. It's a great reason why we enter into great prolonged periods of unhappiness. Look at Psalm chapter 73. This is from Asaph, who is the chief music director at the temple. Some of his writings are in the book of Psalms. He is a godly man. And here he says, truly God is good to Israel, even to such as are of a clean heart. But as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. For I was envious at the foolish when I saw, that's the key word, when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. Here is a godly man who's living for God. He is in full-time ministry as the chief music minister in the temple. Some of these songs are written by him, but he says, I almost lost out. I went through a place where faith was hard to find when I saw the prosperity of people who weren't living for God like I was living for God. There's a place in John chapter 21 where Jesus comes to Peter and restores Peter. Peter had denied Jesus. He had cursed him and said, I don't know the man. And Jesus is there on the shore. The disciples are in the boat. They see Jesus. Peter jumps out and swims to Jesus, but they haven't had a conversation yet. They eat, and now Jesus is going to get down to business about what Peter did. And Jesus forgives him. He restores him. He cleanses him. He says, Peter, feed my sheep. You've been called to be a leader in the church. And just because you did what you did doesn't mean that I'm taking your calling. You're still going to be a leader in the church. And it is a wonderful restoration. The next verse says this, John chapter 21. Then Peter, turning around, Jesus just said, "You're restored." It says Peter turned around, seeing the disciple whom Jesus loved following, whom also leaned on his breast at dinner, and saying, "Lord, who is he that betrayeth thee?" That's John. He sees John, and Peter, seeing John, says to Jesus, "And what shall this man do?" And Jesus said, "If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to you? Follow thou me." Now there's Peter. Forgiven, called, restored, transformed. He looks around and says, "Yeah, that's all nice that you did that for me, but what about that guy? What does he get?" Now you and I can enter into a place of prolonged discontentment when we start looking around at what is happening in other people's lives. Things that they are posing on Facebook. It may not even be happening in their life, but it looks like it's happening in their life. I tell people around here, I don't want to see your happy times on Facebook. I don't want to see your $50,000 bathroom remodel. I don't care to see that. It messes up my morning shower if I know that you're bathing like a sultan in Iran while I'm bathing like a middle class American. I don't want to see your stuff. I don't know that I want to hear how good your kids are doing in school. Keep that to yourself. Cum laude, minor laude, how come? I don't care. I don't want to hear that you lost 30 pounds. Now, if you gain 30 pounds in the next 6 months, post away. I'll be rejoice in your plump happiness. I'll be happy about that. I don't want to see all of your stuff while I'm fighting the middle age spread up here. I don't want to see this thing. I don't want to see your. I don't see a lot of your vacation pictures. I really don't. If you're traveling, curse be you. I don't see your Hawaii pictures. I remember in church once, and on Sunday night, we would let people call out prayer requests, and somebody put up their hand and said, "Will you pray for my wife? They're flying out to Hawaii tonight." And I said, "We don't pray for people going to Hawaii. We pray for people stuck here. Leave that to yourself. We don't pray for those kinds of people. I don't want to see those kinds of things." Now, I'm jesting a bit, but see, Facebook is for four things. It's for selling something. It's for selling something. It's for connecting with people, and that's good. But it's also for social shaming, and it's for bragging. And those two things are bad. We live in an age where we are consumed by media. And again, even on TV, media is funded by advertising. And advertisers are trying to make you feel like you don't have enough. Advertisers don't say, "Hey, we got a great product here to sell. We know you got more junk in your garage than you can get rid of. We know you really don't need what we have to sell, but we thought we'd tell you that we had it for sale." They don't tell you that. They tell you you need this, you're lacking, you don't have it, and here's a lot of pretty people with great dentists who are happy because they have what you don't have. But again, you fall into a place of discontent when you start looking around what other people have. I mean, listen, you can be forgiven, you can be transformed. You got down so dark in a hole one time, you told God you'd do anything if he'd get you out. He got you out of the mess you're in. He saved you. He redeemed you. He gave you an inheritance in heaven. And you're sitting around saying, "I don't know. I don't have what other people have." Sometimes you can envy a different version of yourself. And that gets you in a mess. You start looking at who you used to be. Saying, "Well, I used to have this, I used to have that, I used to be good looking, I used to be athletic, I don't have that anymore." And it gets you into this place, "Well, I'm just not content. I'm completely middle aged and over the hill, and all I got to look forward to is death." That's the way you can think. Sometimes when you're young, you can envy a future version of yourself or the person that you think you'll become. And you got a nice situation. You got good parents. Listen, youth is more valuable than money. I tell people, and it's not completely true, but if you're young and you're not happy, you ain't going to be happy when you get old. I mean, if you can't be happy when you're 16 in high school and you don't even have to work and your body works okay and you're as good looking as you're going to get, I mean, if you're not happy now, you ain't going to be happy when you look like me and have my kind of responsibilities. But you can be young and have all that going for you, but say, well, you know, but it's not a career. And once I get a job, and then I'll get married, and I'll have kids. And then what you do is you spend your youth singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow or Tomorrow, and you spend your life, and you're not happy in probably the best season of your life because you're looking at other people, and you're looking at maybe a future version of yourself. You get into a place, even though you're a believer, you get into a place of deep unhappiness when you start comparing your life to others. It's something else that will create unhappiness, and I've experienced this. And that is that God is calling on you to transition, but you refuse to transition. And that can breed a lot of unhappiness in your life. You know, in about 400 years after King David reigned, Israel went through the worst period of their existence in the Old Testament, and they were taken into Babylonian captivity. And they had a lot of sin. God had shown a lot of mercy, but God said, you're going into Babylonian captivity for 70 years. And part of that was because they had not honored the Sabbath for over 400 years. And God told them, if you don't honor the Sabbath, I'm going to get it back at some point. If you don't let the ground rest, I'm going to get it back. And the 70 years was really all the Sabbaths that they had neglected. But there was more to it than that. And so God says, you're going into Babylonian captivity. But he gave them a word through the prophet Jeremiah about their captivity. And this is what he says. He says, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, unto all that are carried away captives, whom I have caused to be carried away from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build your houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take wives, begat sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that you may be increased and not diminished. And seek the peace of the city, whither I have caused you to be carried away, captives, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof there shall you have peace. And then verse 11. You'll know this one, many of you will. For I know the thoughts I think towards you, said the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Now God says to these people, he said, you're going to captivity, and I know you don't want to do that, but if you'll go down there, and if you'll build houses, if you'll plant vineyards, if you'll allow your children to get married, you'll have grandkids, and I will prosper you there. My goal is really not to destroy you. If my goal was to destroy you, they'd have killed you here. My goal is to take you down there, and as bad as it seems, I want you to prosper in Babylon. But listen to Psalm 137. This is what they said. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion or Jerusalem. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Now, again, God says, go down there. I'm taking you down there. You can prosper where you are. But they say, how can we sing? We can't go down there. How could we sing a happy song there? If we're not here, we'll never be able to sing a happy song again. Now, the tail end of that story is when they were able to go back to Jerusalem, 80% stayed in Babylon. It wasn't as bad as they thought it was. But at least in their minds, they're saying, we could never be happy there. And God was simply saying, if you don't go there and work, you're not going to be happy there. You're not going to be happy in Jerusalem. Now, that is true of you and I. Eric Erickson was a great psychiatrist, and he mentioned 8 turning points in life, and others have come along and added 10, 15 more. But there are, the point that Erickson was driving at was you reach crisis points in life. And at those points, you say to yourself, if my life changes like I think it might, I could never be happy. And so you fight to hold on to the life you have, and you resist the change as hard as you can. But the truth of the matter is that when that transition period comes, if you stay where you are, you'll never be happy again like you were. And the only way to be happy again is to go through the transition. On the other side of the transition is happiness. If you try to hold on to life as it is now, you're going to enter into a long period of discontentment. He named several. Let me give you one. One is the omnipotence of toddlerhood. Omnipotence of toddlerhood. That's where the toddler gets anything they want for a time. The whole schedule of the house is based on the toddler. Don't wake the toddler up. The toddler's sleeping. Oh, the toddler's got to eat now. We can't do that because we got a baby. Everything revolves around the toddler. If you were to have a conversation with the toddler and say, hey, do you think you can be happy when the world doesn't center on you? They'd say, absolutely not. I don't think I could ever be happy if I wasn't the center of attention. The truth of the matter is that you reach a point as a toddler where the only way you're going to be happy again is if you start not being the center of attention. Because if you continue to be the center of attention, you're going to make everybody else angry, and they're going to make you angry. Another one is the omnipotentiality of adolescence. At a certain age, people tell you you can be whatever you want to be. If you want to have 8 kids and work a 60-hour-a-week job and make lots of money, you can do that. I mean, whatever you want to be. You can be whatever you want to be. You can be a rock star and a sports star at the same time. Whatever, and then you can run for president, you can be president. They tell you you can be whatever you want to be. And that's nice unless you're doing that when you're 30. Because all of that potentiality, at some point you have to say, listen, I can't be everything I want to be. I've got to figure out what my life is about, what God has called me to be. And, you know, if I want to have 8 kids, I'm probably not going to go out and run a business, make $200,000. I'm not going to do that. If I want this, I can't have that. And you find out that life takes a lot of hard work, and you have to invest in life, and life is tougher, and there's a lot of potential, but there's not endless potential. And if you don't make that transition, you end up playing video games in your mother's basement when you're 35, miserable. You have to make that transition in life. Once you get out, you know what? You can be married with 4 kids and a job and be happy. That's possible. You can do that if you'll transition, but you got to go through the transition. When you get married, that's another transition. You have to give up freedom. If you look at your life and say, you know what, I don't think I could ever be happy having to answer to another person and having, you know, them know where I'm at and being accountable to another person. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you're married, that's the only way you're going to be happy. You better transition. That's the only way you're going to be happy, if you transition to accountability and stability. There's another transition. That is when you start. That's when you start aging. That's another transition. See, at some point, people will look at you and they'll tack a word on a phrase that they didn't used to use before. When you were younger, they'd say, you're good looking. Now they'll say, you're good looking for your age. That's 2 different things. For your age, you're good looking. But there comes a transition in life. Now, I didn't have to make that transition because I was ugly the whole time. But some of you have to make that transition. And you can spend your whole life trying to look like you're 20 years old. And you can do the surgery and you can beat yourself to death and you can do all that. But the more you do that, the more unhappy you'll be because you're not 20 years old, see. You'll get into that place of discontent, or you can transition where you don't mind being ugly for a 20-year-old. But you look good for your age. You're just not good for a 20-year-old. I mean, listen, you can be happy if you look like Johnny Depp, but sometimes, you know what? You can be happy when you look like Keith Richards. You can go either way. But you have to transition. If you try to hold on to your youth and you don't transition to what life is calling and where God is letting you go, you're going to enter into a place of discontentment and unhappiness until you choose to transition. You have to transition. God calls us from one place to another. Life calls us from one place to another. There's these transitions, and you have to be able to say, you know what? God, you've brought me here. You've let me come to this point. This hasn't taken you by surprise. The life that I knew probably isn't coming back, but there is a new life ahead. I can embrace this. You know what? There are a lot of people who have trouble retiring. This is another phase, because particularly when they have jobs where they're the boss, where they have a lot of people working under them, where they have a lot of authority, sometimes it's very hard for them to simply go home and be told what to do by their wife the rest of their life. It's very hard for them to give up authority like that. But you know what? If you spend your whole life trying to tell people what to do, even though you don't have any more authority, you're not going to be a happy camper. But you know what? You can get into your later years and be a grandfather and a grandparent and play, you know, golf, sort of fun. You can hunt. You can actually have a nice life, although you don't get to tell anybody what to do. You can have a nice life, but you got to transition into that. You got to give up. You got to say, I was in a position of authority, but I don't have it now. But if you want to tell everybody what to do like you used to be able to, now you're going to have a period of unhappiness, and it's going to stay there for a long time because it's going to be rough years for you. You have to transition. There's a place. Put up the next verse. I forget what my point is. There's something up there. No, that's not it. That's not it. Take that down. There's a place where Elijah, this is what I'm looking for. Elijah, there's a famine, and God says to Elijah, go to the brook, and I will feed you with ravens there, and the brook will nourish you. During the famine, what happened? The brook dried up. And here is this prophet of God, and God has been supplying his needs there in the wilderness at the brook, but the brook dries up, and God comes to him and says, now listen. If you want to eat again, you got to go to the widow at Zarephath because she is going to be the new source of your provision. God moved the source. Have you ever noticed that when the children of Israel, they're in Egypt, they're in Egyptian captivity. In Egypt, they eat leeks and onions and fish. That sounded pretty good to me, actually. Leeks and onions and fish. They leave, and in the wilderness, things have changed. They eat manna. The Bible says that when they went into the promised land and the first harvest came up, the manna stopped falling, and now they ate from their own produce. But everywhere God took them, he changed their diet. He said, you were eating that, you're going to eat this, now you're going to eat that. He says to again, Elijah, I was going to supply your needs there, but you're going to starve to death unless you go over there because provision is over there. God changes our lives. He brings us in the new seasons in our life. And if we don't accept that, if we don't embrace that, you and I are bound to spend a season of our life in a place of real discontentment. And you have to look at your life and say, listen, I may not have the people in my life I used to have, but that doesn't mean that this can't be a prosperous life. God can prosper me here even though I don't have those people. You may look at your life and say, I don't have the control I used to have, but God can prosper me here without the control. You may say, listen, I was married, but now I'm single. Can God prosper you as a single person? You may say, I had a house full of kids and now I've got an empty nest. Listen, is God powerful enough to prosper you in an empty house? Is he? Is he able? You may look at your life and say, physically I had those things going for me, but I don't have the vitality that I used to have. Can God prosper you if everything on your body doesn't work right all the time? Can he? And you're going to have to look at your life again and say, and we all have to do that and say, this is a new season. That season has passed. That time is gone. But I believe that Jesus Christ can prosper me here. And I receive it. I didn't choose it for myself. I didn't ask God to give this to me, but life has brought me here, and God has allowed me to get here, and where he plants me, he will grow me. You have to believe that. So one of the reasons, again, that we get into that, the blahs, and we can stay there for a good long time, is because we're looking at what everybody else has. We're not accepting the change that God is allowing into our life. Not accepting that. Thirdly, this is the last point. I had four, but I'm going to cut you a break today. I'm going to give you three. I might work it into the conclusion, though. Three, you're out of the will of God. You're looking at what everybody else is doing. That's one reason. You're not accepting the change that has happened and saying, God can bless me in this new place. My brook is dried up, but he'll provide a widow for me somewhere. I'll be fine. That might be for a single guy here. That might be a word for you. Or third, you might be out of the will of God. You can do that through accepting or allowing sin to come into your life. But you can also be out of the will of God because you know God's call on your life and you're resisting his call on your life. That was Jonah, right? Jonah was called to go and preach in Nineveh. He didn't want to go. God finally delivered him, and he preaches, but he's not happy. And then he goes outside the city waiting for God to destroy them, if by some chance God would. And we don't know how the rest of Jonah's life goes because he's just this miserable person. Why? Because he is out of the will of God. And if God has a call on your life and he has a call on everybody's life, if you are out of the will of God, you are going to be in a place of discontentment. I've spent my whole life around preachers. And one thing I know, if God has called you to preach, you're not going to be happy doing anything else. And that's not just true for preachers. That's true for pastors, associate pastors. That's true for people who've been called to teach. That's true for people who've been called to be fathers and mothers. If you have children, God has called you to raise those children. If you're not doing that, I don't think he's going to even let you be that happy. You have to receive God's call on your life. And if you're a parent here today, by the way, see, I think there are a lot more kids being called into the ministry than are going into the ministry because I look around and there ain't nobody going in the ministry. The Church of God, 3% of the Church of God pastors right now are under the age of 40. We got serious issues. People aren't going into ministry. But parents, let me just say something to you. You want what's best for your kids. If God is calling your kid into the ministry, don't try to get them out of the call, because a lot of parents will say, listen, you can't make any money doing that. It's a pretty miserable kind of life. It isn't any of those things, by the way. But you know, why don't you go to college? Why don't you rethink this? But listen, if God has called your kid to the ministry, they're not going to be happy doing anything else in life. And you may get them into a career where they're making lots of money and they'll be miserable making money because they are resisting the will of God on their life. If you care about them, reinforce and support God's calling on their life. You can do that. What I'm simply trying to say to you is this, and maybe this is the bottom line, is you have to trust God. Trust God with your kids. Trust God with yourself. You have to trust God. You have to trust God in where He's calling you. Can He supply your needs where He's calling you? If you're transitioning, can He supply your needs on the other side of the transition? Has He supplied your needs in spite of what everybody else has been given? Has He been good to you? Do you trust God in that way? We are celebrating, again, Memorial Day. And there's a fascinating place in Gene Howard Smith's book on Eisenhower. He's talking about D-Day. And what people who study military history know is that while D-Day was a success, the most casualties came on Omaha Beach. On Omaha Beach, the Americans really got roughed up. And what the historian says is that the reason it went so bad for the Americans on Omaha Beach was because of General Omar Bradley. Omar Bradley was a 5-star general. He was one of the greatest generals in the history of America. But on D-Day, he made some significant mistakes that cost some people their lives. Because he says that when it came to Omaha Beach, there were 6 mistakes that Bradley made. The first is that he thought Omaha Beach was being guarded by young guys and old guys. He thought it was a weak division of Germans, but they had moved in a division from the Russian front. It was really top-notch German soldiers up on the hill, but Bradley didn't know that. Because he didn't know that, instead of bombarding them for 4 hours, he bombarded them for 40 minutes. And he barely weakened what was on the ridges. Then it says that Bradley sent DD tanks, which were amphibious. He wanted to put the tanks on the beach, but the waves knocked them out. He sent the wrong tanks. None of them made it to the beach. So on the other beaches, the soldiers had tanks, but on Omaha, none of the tanks made it to the beach. And then he says Bradley decided to let the soldiers get into the troop transports 12 miles out to sea instead of 7 miles out to sea. So most of them were seasick by the time they hit the beach. And then he says, and the British, their backpacks were 20 pounds. Bradley put 68-pound backpacks on the American soldiers. He said, so there they are. He underestimates the enemy. He barely bombards them. They don't have any tanks. They're dropped off way out in the ocean. They're seasick, carrying 70 pounds into the waves. And he says, and then Bradley, instead of flanking the enemy, sent them right on, head on into the enemy. And in spite of that, they won. Amazing thing that God did at Omaha Beach. In spite of all of that, they took the cliffs at Omaha Beach. In spite of what Bradley did. Monumental miscalculations by their general. I want to tell you something. Jesus is not Omar Bradley. You can trust Him. You can trust Him. If He takes you into a season, He can sustain you in that season. He can bless you. He has given you what you need. If He has put a calling on your life, follow the calling. You're not going to be happy unless you follow His calling. If you try to run from Him, you're going to run headlong into a life of misery. Follow the calling. Trust Him. He's not leading you into disaster. He's not leading you into an ambush. He's leading you into a place of blessing in your life. Now this last verse, this is it. You can stand with me. This is King David. And this may describe you here today. David had gone through a tremendous trial in his life, a tremendous setback, and I won't give you all the details. Trust me, it was a dark day for him. But he says, "And I am this day weak, though anointed king. Today I'm weak. I'm king, but I'm weak. And these men, the sons of Zeruiah, be too hard for me. But the Lord shall reward the doer of evil according to his wickedness." David's saying, today I'm weak. But I'm not saying tomorrow I'm going to be weak. Today I'm weak, but I serve a God who's going to be with me against all those who have opposed me in the future. David's saying, I'm down today. But it's today. It's today. And you go through seasons when you're down. It doesn't matter, even if you're in the will of God, you go through some seasons of discontentment. Jesus had his Gethsemane. Daniel was in the lion's den. Three Hebrew kids were in the fiery furnace. You go through some difficult times. But even when you go through them with Jesus, you have purpose. You have a drive. You know you're not beat. It's not a happy time. But you know above all, it's a time that won't last. It's today that I'm weak. This isn't going to be a season in my life. Today I feel this way, but this isn't going to be the way I die. This isn't going to follow me for a generation. This isn't going to follow me for a decade. It's just today that I feel weak. And maybe you're here today and you feel weak. Listen to me. You can trust Jesus. He'll give you what you need. If he brings you to a place of change, he'll bring you through that place. There'll be brighter days ahead. And if he's calling on you to do something, he's leading you to blessing. He's not leading you to a place of cursing. Today you might feel weak, but that's today. You trust him today. You depend on him today. You tell him he's a good God. You tell him he's a great Savior. You tell him that he has supplied your needs according to your riches and glory. And then you look at yourself and say, I'm the head, not the tail. I am destined for more than I've got now. I'm a child of God. I may be weak, but I'm a king. I'm a son. I'm a daughter of God. I'm a brother of Jesus Christ. Today I'm weak and I need God today, but I don't plan on staying weak forever. With his help, I'm going to rise again. Father.